doing business between China and the world and looking for logistics and fulfillment tips? Today's show is just for you. Goal from Asia, episode number 92.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight-up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Appreciate you guys listening today. So today I'm recording our number 92 show here in Cebu, Philippines. I didn't realize when I came down that it's turning rainy season. It's been raining pretty hard at my hotel as I record this today. You might even be able to hear some of the rain and traffic in the background. Let me see if you can hear it.
So the rain stopped, but still tons of traffic. It's pretty exciting to me. I still like this, even after all these years. All right, let's get back.
It's such a different vibe here in the Philippines from Hong Kong and China. I haven't been here since early 2012, according to Foursquare or Swarm app, now they call it. And there's definitely a lot more construction and development here than I remember last time. It seems the economy is finally picking up down here and there's a lot more to go. Also, I hope everybody, all the Americans out there listening, had a great 4th of July holiday over the weekend. I spent my Saturday with the family and some friends here over in Shenzhen, having some barbecue. And I also got to meet longtime listener Victor Leal. He's a second trip to China, and he's reached out to me every time he comes, and it's great to catch up with him. I think he's Global from Asia's top fan in South America. He's always spreading a good word from Brazil down to Chile, and it was great to catch up and get some tips on the show and what to cover in the future. So thanks for that, Victor. Okay, and now for today's show, we are continuing the show's quest to discover the process of factory to consumer, or F2C, and we got a good one for you guys today. We have Fred Parada from Tortuga Backpacks, and he is going to share with us some of his processes and tips on how he does logistics and fulfillment between US, China, and the world. So let's listen in. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have with us Fred Parada. Thanks for coming on with us, Fred.
Yeah, good to be here. I've listened to the show for a while, so nice to be on the speaking instead of listening end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. I'm glad you're listening. And I've also, you know, I've also known you linked to us, and we've had some common friends, and Nick from Enter China introduced us, and it's really great to get you on the show, and thanks for sharing. So today you had a great post that I read on Location 180, and it was kind of about running your e-commerce business or product business from anywhere. I think, you know, you were addressing that a lot of people nowadays are talking about information marketing and service businesses running anywhere, but you've been doing product business now for a few years with your backpacks, right? And you had a really great post, and I'm going to use some of that I learned there. And also, I want to kind of also focus on your third-party fulfillment ideas and ways you're doing it, as well as, you know, logistics in general, because I know there's lots of listeners asking always about logistics and fulfillment, so I know they're going to have their ears perked up. So first, Fred, do you mind introducing yourself a little bit? A little bit of background?
Yeah, I'm Fred Parada. Like you said, I run and co-founded a company called Tortuga Backpacks, and we make backpacks for urban travel. So try to combine suitcases and backpacks so that you can travel easily, travel very lightly no matter where you're going, but they're also laid out well and organized, and you can keep all your stuff organized like as if it were a suitcase, but in the shape of a backpack.
Great. Yeah, I mean, traveling on the go, it's a lot for us these days, right, with international travel. And so you're kind of like, are you living out of your backpack, or where do you call home, or do you have a home right now?
I do. I was living out of the backpack for a couple months earlier this year, but I've been in the Bay Area kind of off and on for a while now. So I'm back there now. I'm in Oakland, just across the bridge from San Francisco, but occasionally live out of the backpack.
Got it. Got it. So basically today, maybe first give us, I also learned that you were also in more like a service online marketing business before. Do you want to give us a little bit of background? Maybe before you got into your product business?
Yeah, out of college, started working in advertising for Google. So the ads you see along the side of the search results or the annoying ones on YouTube sometimes, I was responsible for some of those. So apologies to anyone who saw those.
I want to think of you now when I see those.
Only when you see ones with really good copywriting that catch your eye. Just assume those were mine. Cool. But started there, and eventually, after about 3 years, left to get Tortuga off the ground. And while I was doing that, you know, had no background in it, so it's kind of figuring things out as we went. So until we were actually making any money from that, I was doing a lot of freelancing and consulting with the online ad stuff on the side. So the Google ads, Facebook ads, things like that, mostly for startups in the Bay Area.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it seems like a typical. I think it's a good way to start, right? You bootstrapped. You just basically bootstrapped us all the way through so far, or?
Yeah, we haven't taken on any investments. So we've done it bootstrapping with our own money. And then we did two small loans when we were getting started. One was through, this is kind of random, but an organization called the Jewish Free Loan Association, which is based out of LA, and they give out interest-free loans. So that was very helpful. Nice. And then we also used Lending Club, which is a kind of an online platform for loans. It's sort of like Kiva, except not the micro loans to, you know, that's typically like small kind of third world businesses. This is a similar concept, but can be for personal loans or business loans.
Cool, cool. So any crowdfunding or not?
No, when we first started in 2009. So I guess Kickstarter, technically was around then, I think, or at some point while we were getting started, but I certainly hadn't heard of it then, and it wasn't anything big. So, never went down that route. We have, since we've been going, a couple of the products that we've launched, we've done kind of crowdfunding pre-sales through our own site, but that was just with our own audience. I've never done Kickstarter or Indiegogo.
Okay, cool, cool, cool. So yeah, you did the harder way or that's great though. I'm glad to hear we get some different perspectives. And so then you're sourcing primarily in China?
Yeah, all of our products are made in China right now, and we're getting into some accessories now, but most of the stuff that we've done to date has all been sewn soft goods back.
Got it. And maybe give us a little bit of history of the sourcing and the manufacturing for your product.
Sure. We started out not knowing anything about this, so made a lot of mistakes early on, but luckily got to learn from them. So when we started out, everyone, you know, obviously told us to manufacture in China, make it in China. That's how you do it. But we had never manufactured anything before. We didn't know anyone in China. We'd never been to China, et cetera. But we eventually got connected to a couple factories there, but we just didn't have very good communication. The samples we got back were really bad. And I attribute that mostly to us not having detailed enough designs for them, not being able to give them the feedback that they needed. I don't think it was necessarily that they were bad factories or suppliers. So we kind of flailed around for a while doing that, weren't really making any progress. And then we eventually made the very first run of bags, which was super, super small run. We made them in the States just because we could finally find someone to make them and we could give them feedback in person. And those also weren't perfect, the first version, but we did eventually get it out. Obviously, it cost more to make those in the US, so we didn't really make any money on them, but in retrospect, I like to say that that was our minimum viable product. Now that I've learned that term, I didn't know it at the time, but now I like to say that was our MVP, just to get a product out there, get it selling and start getting feedback and learning how to market it and also how to manufacture better.
Yeah. Awesome. I like your style. I think we, I don't know. I'm envious of those people that know everything before they get started, but I think those people probably never start, because I think we're always going to be learning, right? So if we wait until we know what MVP is and manufacturing, it's sometimes maybe too late. So good on you for, you know, just getting out there and hustling. But, and I also like how you just said, you took some of the blame, right? I think a lot of times, both in hardware and in software, people always want to kind of have a scapegoat of their development house, if it's like software, or their manufacturer, if it's hardware, and they say they don't know what they're doing or they're not qualified. But it's totally, totally true. It's like the specifications, drawings, and being like double or triple clear of what you think is so simple, right? Like I've seen some of in your article there about some of the ways you draw your designs, and you use a lot of different software to draw arrows and write text boxes. And that's also what I've learned, is just making things super, super clear, whether you're working even with internally, like your staff or your team, is just, I think being very clear in your communication is so critical, right?
Like, yeah. It's kind of another language you learn, you know, to, whether you're communicating with someone who maybe is a native Chinese speaker, but also speaks English, but you know, you kind of learn that language of the factory or your industry and products, and the best way to say, you know, how to change what you need changed, or how to communicate what you need in the first place. And you got to make sure you give them good specs, or, you know, tech packs in our case. And I mean, imagine if you gave someone a drawing on the back of a napkin, like they're not going to be able to build that for you. They don't know what all the details that are in your head that you're imagining.
So yeah, Chris, when you give somebody the back of a napkin and you're thinking X, and they read and they think Y, and then they give you, you know, their version, and you're all upset of why they didn't read your mind, right? And do what you thought that you meant.
Yeah. Anything you leave up for interpretation, you know, the supplier is going to, they're probably not going to come back to you and ask for a clarification on every single little thing. So they're going to interpret it how they will. And it's probably not the exact way that you would have interpreted it, but I mean, that's not their fault. They're not wrong or stupid or something, just two different people that filled in the blanks differently. So yeah, you have to leave kind of no room for interpretation, or if you do, then you have to correct it with the next round of samples.
Exactly. And then I'm just kind of taking highlights I saw from your article. Like, I liked how you said samples. A lot of people, I know there's listeners and there are a lot of entrepreneurs living in like Southeast Asia, like Thailand, Vietnam, and they're doing business with China, and the sampling, while it's closer, it might get lost in the mail. Do you have any stories of that? Or, you know, I think you have samples shipped over to the US usually.
Yeah, we've had, I mean, sometimes, you know, I visit China a few times a year, so it's great when we can review stuff in person. That's obviously the ideal. You can give a lot more notes and be clearer and ask questions, go back and forth. But because I don't live there, sometimes we're shipping stuff around, which, you know, can be expensive, but it's kind of the cost of doing business the way that we do it. I ran into those problems in Southeast Asia, just trying to actually ship backpacks to customers. We had someone who was traveling there, and we tried to get them a bag in Thailand specifically. And we sent it, and a long time went by, never heard anything, eventually followed up, and customs just turned it away. They don't give a reason. It just comes back to us. So that was someone who bought the bag, and, you know, we had all the paperwork sorted out and everything, but they just turned it back. So you have to be careful trying to, you know, even if it's one sample, you're technically importing it into another country. So some places like a Thailand, maybe also Vietnam, these countries that do their own manufacturing aren't as keen on you importing stuff in, even if they're just, you know, one unit samples. So you can have a little bit more issues there, or of course, anywhere that has a less reliable postal system can be a problem. But, yeah. You know, it's expensive. But if we've FedEx something from China to the US or vice versa, it's, so far we haven't lost any packages.
Yeah, I'm going to try to watch what I say right now. But I've had that experience where I even tried to do some local business in the Philippines. Some of my staff were like my bar products that they were like doing customer service for, and they wanted to sell them locally a few years ago. And literally it was a pretty big product, you know, the shipment, a I don't think I spent more than $500 worth of product, but I sent about there. And then it's stuck in customs. And you get like a piece of paper handwritten on your door at your office that there's a package to pick up at customs. And then you go there and it's really just seems like it's up. I don't know. I don't think they had a system to tax. I think they were kind of like making up how much tax they wanted to add to this. And I was with my staff and it was in Tagalog, local Filipino language. And it was just seemed like, I don't know if you call it the corruption word, but it feels like they were just kind of picking a number and bargaining on it. And I remember I even have it on my personal blog years back, but it was just a piece of handwritten paper, like not a napkin, but a scratch paper. And it was some kind of like multiple line items of taxes and taxes and the product import duties was about the same as the value of the product itself. I think I don't know what exactly happened, but I think we bargained a little bit less. But yeah, I mean, really a headache. And some of these countries, I guess they're trying to protect their local companies' products or something from competition. But I think it's getting better. Maybe that can lead towards our main topic, or what I think I'd like you to share is, you know, logistics and fulfillment. Globally, you know, you got China manufacturing and you're over in the US. So this is probably your two main places. But I'd love to hear some of your ideas of, you know, so you're shipping direct from China B2C or B2B to the US. And then maybe you can give us some little bit of the inside guts of your logistics here.
Yeah, I can kind of walk you through the system or systems that we're using now, and tell you some of the stuff that we've experimented with and tried or rejected over time. But right now, the way we do everything is all of our orders and pricing, everything is FOB, so freight on board. So the factory will take the cargo and put it on the ship. We ocean freight everything because the bags are pretty big, so it would be really expensive to air freight them. They're kind of responsible for getting everything from the factory onto the boat. And then we've used a couple different freight forwarders, which I can jump into in a second, but worked with them to help us connect basically from that point until the goods are delivered to our warehouse. So usually that's going to be ocean freighting, getting everything through customs in the U.S., possibly storing it for a day or so in their warehouses, and then trucking it to the warehouse for the logistics company we use. And we've used a couple different freight forwarders. We've tried a few different ones to connect all those points. And mostly, you know, being a small business, I want to be able to work with people who can take something from end to end. You could probably save money breaking down each of those little parts, but I don't think it would really be worth our time. I'd rather have someone that we pay slightly more to handle, you know, end to end and kind of get it as far as possible. And then once we deliver it to the US, right now we're using Shipwire as our 3PL, our third party logistics service. So that means they do the warehousing. They've got all of our stuff in their warehouses, and then they do the picking, the packing, and getting it to under the carrier's trucks. So basically handing it off to UPS or FedEx or whoever's delivering it. And then we use their system for some of the like tracking and returns and anything else dealing with the physical goods. That's kind of the overview.
Cool. So yeah, thanks for sharing. And so then you would even if the customer was in, say, mention, I think you said Southeast Asia, Thailand. I don't know if you said a country before, but so you have one B2C customer, you still ship from the US to Southeast Asia for now?
Yeah, we don't ship to most of Southeast Asia anymore, but North America, Western Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and then a couple places in Asia we've just started to. But yeah, we're still storing and shipping everything from the US, even though that's, you know, it's kind of silly, I guess, to bring it all the way here and then ship it to, say, Hong Kong. But that's been, the US is still the bulk of our business. And then as we scale up, the plan is to start warehousing in other countries or other continents, basically, so that we can, the people living there. So, you know, say Western Europe was next. I think Shipwire has some places in Germany and the UK too. So as we grow, we could store some inventory there. And then that way customers in Western Europe would be able to get their stuff faster, avoid some of the excessive customs and things like that for importing, and you know, have faster shipping, better service, be a little happier with the service they get from us versus right now, you know, it's kind of expensive to order something all the way from the US and deal with the time and cost of it.
Sure, sure. So, you know, I want to focus our show, but I'm sure you sell on Amazon, right? I'm sure it is.
We actually don't.
Oh, right, you don't now. Sell we, on Amazon. Okay.
We did. So when we started out, I mentioned we've used, we've used a couple different freight forwarders, and Shipwire is the second logistics company we've used. We started out with Amazon FBA, the fulfillment by Amazon, and they, you know, it works well for what it does. We got a few sales through Amazon, but selling through just our own website, and they were doing the shipping. But we decided to eventually we moved away from them. And the reason is that because of the size of our bags, they consider them oversized. That's their category for it, which means that they won't ship them out of the country. And we wanted to start expanding and testing, you know, Canada, Western Europe and stuff, even though, you know, we're not perfectly set up for there. It's a little expensive and, you know, takes longer for folks there, but we wanted to start trying that, and we just couldn't do that through Amazon. So decided to switch over to Shipwire.
That's really interesting. That you're not, you know, FBA, of course, not everyone uses FBA that sells on Amazon, but you just don't even sell on Amazon, even your own products. So maybe I'm sure some people are interested to hear the thought process here, if you don't mind sharing a little bit more. It's the oversized bags? That's the main reason, or?
Yeah, that was the big one. You know, obviously there are some downsides to Amazon. They've got the traffic and all of that, which is awesome. They've got buyers who are ready to buy. But, you know, from our perspective, one of the big things you lose is that contact with the customer. And, you know, we're trying to build a brand and a company. And to date, we've done a lot of our sales and pre-sales and things like that have come from emailing our list. So people who, let's say, bought the original backpack. And then when we came out with the day pack, which is kind of complimentary to it, we emailed all those people, let them know about it. And that way we had our successful sale for it. So with Amazon, while you get the sales and the revenue from that, you know, you're not really able to contact those people again in the future. So, you know, we kind of saw that as a barrier and a challenge. So decided to focus on our site for now, but we're thinking about jumping back in Amazon, doing some testing there now that, you know, so many people are successful with it. And I have a few friends who do well there and I think can help us and give me a little advice on how to optimize for Amazon. And, you know, we can jump back into it and see what we can do in terms of sales and hopefully converting those people into, you know, getting them on our list after they buy something.
Got it. So I heard a nightmare story, so I don't know if this is true or not, but a Chinese friend of mine, I'll probably get him on a show one day, but he was selling always on Amazon, doing really well, and then he wanted to only sell on his website, so he took it off Amazon, but he says that he couldn't delete the ASIN, the Amazon SKU number, so it was still ranking in Google, and the product was still there, and it was outranking his own website. And it was out of stock. So people were always contacting him, when will it be back on Amazon? And he would try to tell them to buy from him, but they wouldn't or couldn't or whatever reason. So I don't know if you were able to remove your product from Amazon, or is it like stuck there after you create it?
I don't know if you can remove it. I think ours still shows up. It doesn't outrank our site, but I think it's on the first page. Still. And yeah, same thing as your friend has sold out. We haven't really gotten many emails about, like you said, she did, but we do occasionally hear from people who, you know, want us to be on Amazon because they want to use Amazon Prime or something like that. So, you know, we're going to get back into it and test the waters again and see if we can make it work.
Okay, cool. Great. And so then maybe we talk about your ocean shipments. Yeah. I mean, I also have a lot of people asking me who to recommend. And I'm actually not currently in a product business myself, but I have been and I've worked with others. It's still really tricky because I guess there's just a lot of turnover in the people and the communication and, you know, but do you have more to share on maybe, you know, the ocean container shipments? And I guess, so you're on West Coast, you ship to West Coast. It takes probably just a couple of weeks from port to port normally for you?
Yeah, usually somewhere between 2 and 3 weeks, like maybe 16 days or something like that. And then we occasionally ship some stuff to the East Coast so that we can get stuff to people on the East Coast a bit faster. But yeah, the freight forwarding industry it's tough. I feel like it's a very opaque industry. Still very old school. I was telling someone my freight forwarder, the one that we had been using, when they send quotes, it's in an email and it's all typed out, you know, this thing and the price for that, this other thing, the price for that. And then I have to put it all into a spreadsheet so I can figure out what the total is. It's not a very technical industry, and I live out here in Silicon Valley and use all different software for stuff. So I don't know. I've always found it to be kind of annoying. And the other thing is there's just so many fees and different parts of the price that, you know, I don't know. I'm not an expert in it. So I don't, who knows which of them are real versus kind of thrown in there or overinflated or whatever. You know, it's a little hard to know what's going on. So yeah, I would definitely tell people to kind of shop around and see who they feel comfortable working with.
Yeah, it's really painful. Like I used to do sourcing as a service as well as my own bar products business. And a lot of people want to have the quotation to your like home country port, like FOB, like LA or maybe San Francisco. And nobody wants to do that because I think you'll get crushed because it seems like it's also in the hands of the government. It's not even the logistics company. Sometimes I think the other issue is governments make certain charges, or there might be more, you might get some extra inspection fees. You might have seen that where they actually spot check certain containers and then they have to charge that container an extra fee to be scanned, and then that's just passed on to the importer. So I think a lot of times,
and then there's my favorite is GRI, general rate increase, which just means like, oh, the price just went up at this date at random, which it seems to constantly go up. So exactly. It's a little hard to tell, you know, if that's legit or not.
Even for me, as an entrepreneur, I always think maybe there's opportunity in this, but I think you can't really make a stripe or a brain. I mean, I don't want to be negative, but of course the buyer, you would love, but I don't know how the technology company or that, you know, like could really protect themselves from getting just destroyed by these pop-up fees, you know? And, you know, it's just really a tricky one. So
there are a couple tech companies trying to bring the industry into something like the 21st century, though. We're actually testing one out for our next shipment. So I can't guarantee that they're great or that we'll love them yet. But there are two that I guess I would tell people to check out. One is called Flexport, FlexPort. And the other is Haven, just like the word. But basically the idea behind both of them is that they're kind of a UI, a tech layer on top of forwarding. So instead of, like I was saying before, getting an email with all the prices written out and having to email the freight forwarder to ask, did it arrive? Where's the stuff? Where, you know, are we through customs yet or whatever? They've got everything in kind of an interface, and they'll send you automated emails when stuff is picked up or delivered. They've got all the estimates in there. You can get a quote right in there. But they both look way easier to work with. And I just quoted both of them out versus the freight forwarder we were using, and their price is better and the interface is better. So hopeful that that some of these tech companies will get it right and we'll be able to have a, you know, kind of a usable interface to do the forwarding.
Yeah, definitely keep me posted too, because I'm always asked. And I've had it. I used to recommend, and sometimes I'm afraid, because it could be the client's fault too, but I'm constantly sometimes CC'd on emails after I made introductions. And there's just like shipment issues. And so it's just really tricky to be confident on those services in these logistics companies. Cause I guess it's also sometimes out of the hands of the shipping company too. Like like we were talking about customs before, in certain countries, they can hold the shipment, right? And it's not the logistics guy's fault, but, you know, the client or the importer will, of course, push on the logistics company about that delivery. Where is it? And it's definitely a tricky thing.
Well, they're going to get all the blame, exactly, right, for any of those problems, because exactly, you can't tell where they're coming from. And I mean, if they do their job, then that just means no problem happened. You know, it's not like they're going to go above and beyond and you'll love your freight forwarding company.
Exactly. Cool, right? So I always like to say, somebody starting out today, or, you know, trying to get their head around all of this. Of course, there's tons here, but let's just say generally, like, buying from China and, you know, being somewhat location independent with their product business, what would you kind of give them some ideas to get started?
Yeah, I think, you know, even if you don't intend to live in China, it may be helpful to at least spend some time there when you're first getting started. And, you know, that can be in trying to source and find factories, or, you know, with your first order to, you know, spending time at the factory, checking in a lot during production and, you know, doing the QC and stuff like that. But just kind of showing up so you can start learning the ropes a little faster, which I think that's something we didn't do. But in retrospect, I think would have helped starting out. And also lets you start building your relationship with your suppliers. That's one of the things I talked about in that post. You mentioned that, you know, if you want to be remote, there are still going to be some times when it's more helpful to be somewhere in person. So one of those times I mentioned earlier, which is like reviewing samples and giving notes in person, which can be helpful. But also some of that is just the relationship building with your suppliers and your reps and, you know, showing up, showing you're serious about what you're doing, not just cold emailing them through Alibaba from the US or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you show up and shake someone's hand and go out to lunch and all that, then they can see that you're a little bit serious. And some of that relationship stuff you can't really do through Skype or email. You know, you have to be there. So use your in-person time judiciously.
Great. Yeah, that was me back in 07. I was like, I'll just spend a few months in China and somehow I'm still here. But who knows, maybe. Yeah, like it's definitely, I always tell people it's not going to hurt to come out here and learn a new culture, a new perspective. And it's definitely going to help no matter what, where you end up in the future. So thanks again for coming on, Fred. How can people buy your bags and contact you, or questions, or to read out what else you got out online?
Yeah, the site's at tortugabackpacks.com. That's TORTUGA backpacks.com. And you can find everything you need on there, all the social media accounts. And, you know, if you have any questions for me, I'm on Twitter. It's probably a good way to reach me. It's just twitter.com/Fred Parada with two R's and two T's.
Great. Thanks, Fred. We'll link that up on the show notes too. And also that article on Location 180 too. So thanks for coming on and sharing so openly. I know some people want to kind of like hide some of their secret processes, and I really appreciate you sharing. So thanks again, Fred.
Yeah, of course. I've listened to the show and read your stuff for a while. So happy to give instead of just taking.
Great. Okay, that's a wrap. Thanks, Fred, for coming on the show and sharing. I'm pretty sure people enjoyed today and got a lot as much as I did. And as always, the show notes and links for everything mentioned can be found on the website at globalfromasia.com/episode92. As always, comments, feedback, show ideas are very much appreciated. I'm always wondering, should I do more in-depth case studies like with Fred, where we talk about the business from start to finish and get into guts, or should we focus on like vertical processes and topics like, so, you know, if you guys have some tips or ideas, I'd love to hear from you. Okay, and now time for me to get back to organizing and setting up this new internet marketing office here in Cebu. I'll show some of the early construction photos on the show notes at globalfromasia.com/episode92. And I'm happy to say that I'm getting people already interested in leveraging this new office with their business and marketing. So we're mostly going to be doing content creation and link building. But at this point, we're open to maybe dedicated desks for those interested. So let me know. And stay safe, everybody, and keep taking action in building your global business. Cheers.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.